because people have other things to do.
It's already going, so you don't need to ask me.
Okay, thank you. Alrighty. Are we waiting for anything, or is it time?
No, it's good.
Okay.
No, I'm waiting to be
reunited. Okay. Alright, I guess we can turn around and say a prayer. In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Ghost, amen. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Saint Joseph, Saint Pius X, Saint Gregory. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Ghost, amen. Okay. We covered the fifth commandment last time. And 2 weeks ago, we didn't have class because weather was horrific. So anyway, so we got a little better weather right now, but it seems to be quite changing. Anyway, today then we're scheduled to cover the sixth and the ninth commandments, and there's always a little bit of difficulty in doing so because it's a delicate subject. I'll be delicate. But they're old enough to kind of know certain things. So anyway. When one of the problems with adults today is sometimes that they are too trusting of their children. And they think that their children will never have this problem. Okay. They have a tendency to forget about the effects of original sin. And it's interesting when the priest anoints at the end of a person's life, when he gives the anointings for the extra unction, he anoints each of the senses and talks about, may the remains of sin that you have committed by this faculty or that faculty be removed, you know, through the mercy of God. And so we have the different senses, and one of the senses which has been affected by the original sin, which has affected quite deeply, is the sense of touch. Okay? The sense of touch. And that, of course, plays into the situation with the problems with Commandments 6 and 9. Okay? And as I say, the people are also trusting and they think that everything is going to be wonderful, and they don't understand how difficult it is out there in the world. And they don't understand that children do have something called curiosity. And sometimes they want to have that curiosity satisfied and they get themselves into trouble because of it. To give you an example, without getting into details of who, where, when, why, how, students were given an assignment to do some sort of research. Okay. So now the latest craze is to do research. We don't go to the library. We go on the internet. Okay. And so the child told the parent, he's probably in maybe 7th, 8th grade. I mean, he has to do research for his paper. Okay, so they trusted him. And he went to some bad websites, which dealt with unnatural sins. And the parents found out only too late after he started experimenting with his friends. So they're stuck in a situation where they can't even let him alone with other boys to play because of the problem that he's gotten into now. And the parents now are horrified what they got into. But once Pandora's box is opened, it's hard to close it back up again. Okay. So, you know, and the parents admitted they were too trusting. They were too trusting. They were in a dilemma that at a certain point in time, so what do we do? You know, it's as if we have to watch, keep our eyes on him 24/7 because of the Pandora's box that he opened up. So, you know, there are reasons why the priests are somewhat critical of some of the modern technology that's available, because so much can happen so quickly without people knowing it. And then when it's done, it's a problem. It's a problem. You know, it's happens, and of course, parents too, another situation. You know, they're maybe in their teens, late teens, but, you know, he's such a good boy. He's like a friend of the family. You hear this kind of a thing. Well, that's what they lead their parents to believe, while they do other things which are far beyond what they should be doing. So anyway, so it's important to understand the sins that are related to 6 and 9 are, well, they're not the worst of sins, but they have a certain attachment that's hard to get people to be removed from the attachment. And once they get into the vice, it's hard to get out of the vice. So you have to be very careful about that, and you have to help youth to aspire to the virtue of purity, and that help them to realize that it's an important thing, and that they need to stay away from the occasions of sin. So it's very, very important, because it's something that once it's lost, it's hard to then reestablish it. And we'll talk about it, of course, a little bit more in detail. Okay. So, you know, as you know, the whole purpose of the situation of the proper use of the marital rite is for the sacrament of marriage. It's meant for procreation. It's meant to continue the human race. And if there was not some enjoyment attached to it, people wouldn't want to get married. If all they want is, if they all they would have is all of the heartaches, the troubles, the difficulties of marriage, without any kind of consolation whatsoever, nobody would get married. Okay, so there is a certain enjoyment or certain satisfaction that's attached to it. You know, certain consolations that are there in order so that the human race continues on. You know? And so, but it is a holy thing within the confines of marriage. It's meant to bring souls that are meant to populate heaven. You know, that's the idea of bringing souls that are meant to populate heaven through the sacrament of marriage. And so, in itself, it's a holy thing. But, of course, the devil wants to try to destroy that and make it so that it is perverted. And so that is the problem. And so you have to be very careful about that. Okay. Now, with regard to the sixth and the ninth commandments, the sixth has to do more with actions. The ninth with thoughts. And of course, you know, when the children are young, they're rather innocent, especially about the time when they're making their first communion. And sometimes, you know, they know the Ten Commandments, you know, and you get someone who's in second or third grade, he comes to the confessional, he says, you know, when he's confessing his sins, he says, "I committed adultery 3 times. And so, you know, the priest has to be very careful, so he says, well, what did you do? So you have that kind of situation. They learn what it is later, but in the beginning they don't know. But the thing is that normally when you see the examination of conscience for children, it's meant to help them so that they retain their purity of soul. Okay. When you get to the commandments on 6 and 9, examination of conscience for children, it says, did I read any bad books? Did I talk about bad things with my companions? Did I, you know, these kinds of things without going into detail? Because they want to keep the children away from the occasions of sin, you know, the bad magazines, the bad books, all that kind of thing, so that they can preserve the purity of soul that they're meant to have. Okay. And in this world, it's a little bit difficult with the way things are so blatantly displayed these days. You know, it's unfortunate, but that's what the challenge is these days. And, you know, and unfortunately, as I say, with the problems of the internet, it's all too accessible. You know, the things that are on the internet that are accessible used to be accessible in adult, what they call adult bookstores, which I don't know why they called that. That's a misnomer by itself as well. But, you know, and unfortunately, it's almost too accessible for them. And from what I've heard, there's a large percentage of websites that are devoted to this perversion. So anyway, it's something. That's why, of course, we try to tell the families, don't let your children use the internet, you know. Or if they must use it, make sure that that computer is out in a very visible place and that they can only use it with the supervision of the parent. And the parent has the password that the children, in order to let the children get on it while they're there watching them use it. It's a bit of a hassle, but it's worth it. It's worth it. Okay. If it is absolutely necessary. But I question the necessity of it myself. So, okay. So it says, you know, what it forbids, the sixth commandment, is more than just what it actually says. It says an infidelity of married people. It's called adultery. It also forbids acts of impurity with oneself or another. Okay. So immodest language, bad jokes, illusions, double meanings, these kinds of things are forbidden by the sixth commandment. Okay. Forbids reading bad materials. Okay. And, of course, being with others who can cause the passions to be aroused in a bad way. Okay. So if you have temptations, of course, temptations are not sins, and if you fight them and you fight them off well, it is such that it actually works for your credit, your merit by fighting the temptations. And so, of course, to fight the temptations, one of the things you do is right away is prayer. Of course, it's good to pray in general, but especially in times of temptation, prayer is one of the things that you do. Another thing that you do in times of temptation is that you also busy yourself, if at all possible. Because man has this limited faculty, his intellect. They can only consider one thing at a time. So if you get yourself busy doing something, you're not idle. It also is a help. And also, there are some means of penance that you can undergo so that you exercise the virtue of temperance. Because the virtue of temperance has to do with the goods with regard to food and also with goods of the body. So, like for instance, if you practice some penance with regard to food and drink, like for instance, maybe not eating between meals or something like that, voluntarily imposed, self-imposed penance, it also will help you so that you don't, so that you have strength of will to resist the temptations when they come. Okay. So, anyway, these are means of working to fight against the temptations. The church understands the marital act as being something sacred. It's meant for marriage. Okay, it's not meant to be handled though in a general setting. Okay, you're not. It's not meant to be discussed in a general setting. It's a mixed crowd, different ages, different male and female. You have people who present it are not even have a don't even many of them don't have a Catholic mind, you know, and so especially like for example in the public schools when they present these kinds of things, it makes it into a real disaster, to absolute disaster. And of course, then you have all kinds of problems with it, so that, you know, in the public schools, they will be such that they provide contraceptives to the children without any permission of the parents, on the one hand, but they won't allow them to have an aspirin without having permission from the parents, on the other hand. It's insane. It's insane. It's insane. They say that, you know, there are people that actually want to see the morality of a country just to be destroyed, and so you see many magazines and things that are out there that are just horrific, and things are going steadily downhill, so that things that are even today what are considered popular entertainment magazines that you see out there, they have a lot of stuff in there, and I avoid looking at them, but when the person right next to you, in the seat right next to you, has them wide open, it's a little bit hard on a plane to completely avoid them. You know, it's horrible, and that's what they read for their recreation. And it's unfortunate. It's no wonder we have the problems we have, and it's really unfortunate that this is the kind of world we live in, and it's. The other thing that happens that's very interesting is people place such importance on this thing, the material side of marriage, when they actually get married and they realize that this is only one small part of marriage, they end up being disillusioned afterwards and say, "What? You know, this is." They get themselves into a mess because they say, gosh, I have to take care of working all day and paying the bills and taking care of, the woman has to take care of the diapers and the cooking. This is not what I thought it was going to be all about. You know, that's not how it was advertised. And, you know, sometimes because they don't understand, that's how the difficulties begin in the marriage. And if they don't have a good grip on the idea of sacrifice, the idea of wanting to give of oneself, and the real meaning of what love really is, they get themselves into more and more problems these days. And that's why you see the divorce rate soaring to, what is it? It's probably about 2 out of 3. Some places higher than that. That's what's happening to the marriages. There's just this lack of willingness to make the sacrifices necessary to make things work in a marriage. And there are many sacrifices in marriage. And I think I mentioned that once before. So, anyway. So this is what we have to be concerned with, and that's what we have to work at. You know, the idea is to cultivate the purity of mind and soul. This is what is commanded by the sixth and ninth commandments, to develop a purity of mind and soul so that we understand what we're here for, what things are, the whole scope of things. And we, of course, work to help God, or to be an assistance of God in the work of bringing new souls into being for those couples who are married. It's interesting, you know, I mean, it's one of the Beatitudes. Blessed are the pure of heart, for they shall see God. Who has a purity of heart these days? You know, they have a very clouded vision of God. They don't even really want to aspire to the things of God. And, you know, each of the states of life, you can have the married life, you can have the vocation to the religious life. Each of them have certain things that that are very much a part of them. If you're part of the married life, you know, you have certain obligations. You have more material obligations to take care of those people that are entrusted to your care. And you have a lot of more material concerns. The religious life, you know, a lot of people think of it, oh, well, they've given up this, that, and the other thing. Well, yeah, perhaps. But they gave it up because they want to be more directly involved in the service of God. And so they don't have a lot of the material concerns. They have certain ones. We all do. But they have less of them than the married, the couple do, so that they can concentrate and focus their attention on the things of God. So it's a positive thing, actually. You know, the purity of heart that they have is such that it helps them even more so that they can aspire to the things of God. And of course, their purity of soul is required also to be completely chaste. Okay. The sad thing about today is also with regard to purity, is that many people think that during their courtship, okay, maybe they had a bad courtship, they didn't do quite things the way things ought to be, but we'll get married and that'll fix everything. It doesn't. It doesn't fix everything. The problems of purity before marriage continue into the marriage, because the problems of impurity before marriage ends up with problems of infidelity in the marriage. Because it's an important thing that people don't understand, that that's the way it is. So, you know, we have to understand that. We have to understand that those things are there. And it's necessary to see. The situation then also with regard to the even people when they court, you know, what they are allowed to do. It's important to understand when they are courting, they're allowed to do between the boy and the girl what's allowed between a brother and a sister. Okay. Sometimes I instruct them, you know, about that. They say, "What?" You know, they didn't realize that this is what they're allowed to or not allowed to. So anyway, it's, you know, there's. I also recommend that if they're courting, it's nice to bring a little brother or sister along with them. Okay? Bring a little boy, brother or sister along with you when you're courting, you know? It's interesting. You get to see how the other party deals with young children, which is, you better figure out what they're going to be like when they're dealing with little children. And, you know, and I also mentioned, too, that, you know, it can shorten the time of courtship and work to sort out, weed out those who are likely prospects and those who are not very quickly. Because, you know, and if you can weed them out quickly, that means you save money, at least for the boy. So anyway, so it's one of those situations. It's an important thing to do properly. I was reading one book from years ago. They said that by when the time comes when the engagement begins, when they now it's their fiance, the man has the right to put his arm around the woman when they're engaged, and they can give each other a goodnight kiss. Okay, and they should see each other no more than once a week. Once a week. Okay, tried to sell that today. It all has to do with the occasion of sin, and even with regard to dating. You know, who can date, who can't date, and that's also a thing. Who can date and who can't? Some people think that they can date, you know, 15 years old. You can't date at 15 years old. You know, some of them have parents that drive them to the date because they don't have a driver's license yet. They're not even 16. So, you know, when you're dating, and I, you know, it's meant for the young people, it's just, there's what you call an occasion of sin. And we're talking about, in this case, mortal sin. And when you're dating, it's a near occasion of sin. Now, the question is it a necessary occasion of sin? Or is it a voluntary occasion of sin? For a couple who is such that they are of age, able financially to afford it, mature, things are such that they could get married, that they're ready for it, you know. Okay, it becomes a necessary occasion of sin to date in order to find a spouse who's a good prospective spouse. Okay. So it's a necessary occasion of sin. And it's then, because of that, it's allowed. But if you're not in that situation, so say, for instance, it's going to be years before you can get married. Maybe you're too young, or maybe you're going to college and you still need to get things squared away there. You know, and you, it's not possible for you to get married for some length of time because of it. It becomes a voluntary occasion of sin. It's a near occasion of sin, and it's serious sin. And so because of that, you can't be dating. You can't be carrying on a courtship in this kind of situation because it's headed for a problem. You can't do that. It's only when the couple is ready. And of course, that's what people don't understand, and they don't want to acknowledge. It's a sad thing, you know. So you end up doing that. And of course, the other thing is too, when we talk about that, it has to be somebody who's you're able to get married. You know, people date divorcees. It happens. You know, or, well, they'll get an annulment. No. The idea of an annulment is that the marriage never happened because there was a situation or condition which made the marriage invalid. So when a person is married, and even if they think that they might be able to get an annulment, nevertheless, the benefit of the doubt goes towards the validity of the marriage. The marriage is valid unless it's proven otherwise. So you have to treat that situation as if there's a valid marriage involved, and you don't date somebody who's married. I'm sorry. You can't. You can't do that. So anyway, but people get this wrong idea. You know, well, we'll get it worked out. Well, we even get married by the court or by some other minister, and then after we get the annulment, then we'll get married in the Catholic Church. And you might be asked to go to a ceremony. Maybe a relative wants to get married, and they're not going to get married, and one of them is Catholic, for instance. Or there's some problem with this annulment or whatever, or the divorce. You cannot attend the wedding. You can't go. Because they're not really getting married. You know. What are you going to do, congratulate them? How can you congratulate them? They're getting themselves into a state of sin. Congratulations on the fact that you're entering into a permanent state of sin? No. How do you do that? How do you do that when, what do you write on, if you give them a gift? If you are, so you can't really give them a gift, but if you were to try to give them a gift, what do you write on the card? Congratulations? You know, I mean, you've got that problem. You know, so, you know, modern world likes to just cover everything over, says it's all wonderful, you know, and dress everybody up and everything's fine. No, it's not. It's not. It's not. And so we end up with this situation where it's very awkward indeed. So, I mean, done properly, it's a beautiful thing. It's a sacred thing. It's a thing that's to be, true congratulations, but, you know, and the other thing is, too, many want to get into situations where they marry someone who's not Catholic. The Church actually forbids that. It forbids that. It's only with a special dispensation that it can be done. It has to come from the bishop. Now, today, it's oftentimes done as a rubber stamp. But, you know, it's done, but what kind of marriage is it? And if you're trying to bring these souls into being that are meant for heaven, and you have one of the parties not being Catholic, how is that going to work? You know, how is that going to work? Oof. You know, it's going to be a very difficult situation. And many of the children that are in that state end up not practicing the faith. Because if their parents' life goes very well as husband and wife, well, then they say, well, what's the big deal about religion? There are different religions and everything goes fine. Why do you put such a value on the Catholic religion? It doesn't matter. If the marriage goes bad and there's fighting and everything else, all kinds of uproar in the marriage, well, then the children are marred by that too. So either way, you've got a problem. So anyway, so that's also, you know, it's linked to the sixth commandment and the ninth commandment. What do you do and how does one do it? So you have to work hard to avoid the occasions of sin and to make of it a holy courtship as well. A holy courtship will lead to a holy marriage. And unfortunately, we wish there were more of them. So, you know, it's a thing that that is there. It's just, there's a certain virtue of modesty and purity in the way one dresses, the way one speaks, the way one carries oneself. It's a very important thing. It's not that we have to dress up like Little House on the Prairie. And, you know, and the boys need to be careful about their speech, their conversation, the way they carry themselves, the way they think of things too, you know, because it can be degraded very easily as well. And so it's for both. And so it's important. It's important indeed. And so we have to understand that these are the situations that we're in these days, and we have to be careful that we don't get ourselves going the wrong direction, or that that we, you know, want to go along with the crowd. So it's an important thing. So I've been talking here for a while. I got about, 12 or 13 minutes. Usually you start talking and then we don't get up there on time. So I'm going to stop now. So you can talk if you wish and express your concerns or whatever. You know, it's interesting, too. I mean, when people put their kids in public school, they really invite a real mess, because a lot of these things that I talk about, when you put them in public school, the public school had a whole different mindset regarding these issues. It can cause a real problem indeed. And, of course, with the children, you know, the parents are the ones who help in instructing the children regarding this. And it's a delicate thing for them, and they have to decide when is the right time, and that's always a delicate thing, too. Too soon, when they're not ready, is not good. Too late, after they've already heard the corrupt way of explaining it on the world, is wrong, too. So there's always this delicate time when you know, you have to deal with it with the individual and to help them to understand. So anyway, questions, comments?
There's a great CD set from Father Dorham.
Okay. And what's it entitled?
It's either, I think it's something to do with the marriage or the courtship.
Marriage or courtship?
It's a 10 CD set.
Okay.
And I wish every set of parents could hear it, and then every couple who's courting could listen to it. Because he explains the way it should be, the way that we have not been accustomed to hearing it. But he brings back what it should be, what the courtship should be. It's excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How do you feel about chapter on this problem? I've always told my children that I thought they should have them. And nowadays, you know, more than the Catholic thinks that's a little severe. So we're just talking about it today, so it's like we're joking because we have a couple of kids who are more prone to Catholic help, and we're joking about sending them with.
Well, that's exactly what I don't know if you weren't here. Were you here when I mentioned that? Oh, if you wasn't here, okay. I mentioned exactly that same thing. I said, bring them with you. I says, if it's not meant to be, it'll shorten the time of courtship and you'll weed them out quickly. It will be savings of money, time, effort, and all kinds, and you won't get yourself into all kinds of problems also. Bring them along.
I just about have one of the kids crying. I'm just joking about it because she said we must have all thought she was a cattle tongue because we were joking about sending her with. But
we did, my little sister went along.
I just didn't know. I mean, it was kind of one of those things where, like, you talk about it nowadays and looking at a lot of times, I think you're being pretty severe, but to me, there's too much danger without. So.
And it's nice to have them, if they are courting, to be there with her family or his family to spend time with them on an outing.
Right.
You know, it's not just where you go off, pair off by yourselves, because that's where the problem can easily occur.
Right.
You know, because people seem to think, oh, I'm in love with her. When you get married, or vice versa, when you get married, you marry into the family. You do.
A lot of people don't realize that.
You do marry into the family. And that's a very important point.
The family made them what they are. You can't stand the family. There'll probably be a point where you can't stand them either.
That's correct. I also instructed the boys, I said, you know, be careful, because usually when the breakups occur when they're dating, it's after Christmas, after Valentine's Day, after the birthday. Because, well, you know why. Yes. Well, the other thing is you can see how they relate to small children, because you're going to have to, that's marriage, you're going to have children, and if they can't stand children, well, I think maybe you should think about someone else. Because that's what a big part of it. You're going to have to help in those kinds of situations. So yeah, it's so important to be balanced and to have this view, which is not held by many, unfortunately. So anyway, they think the romance is going to go on throughout the whole marriage. You know, I've seen situations where, you know, the girl thinks she's found the prince and she's the princess. And as the children start coming, to maintain that status of prince and princess is kind of hard to do. And so, anyway, so in these cases, you would hope that they realize that, okay, that was their fantasy and that the reality sets in and they accept the reality. But there are some who don't. And you have a situation where the marriage breaks up because they can't accept the reality of the situation. That's what unfortunately happens in some of these situations. I dealt with a number of them, and sometimes it's the man, and lately I've been seeing sometimes it's the woman who walks away from the marriage. I don't see how you can walk away from your children, but some of them do.
I see more often than not it's the women that give me a tougher time about, like, having the kids than the men do. And stuff in the stores and everything is just kind of shocking to me.
I've seen some of that, and I've seen it even in traditional circles, believe it or not. And it's a hard thing.
Yeah, we have too. And even that thing that you mentioned about the annulment, I have a friend who's actually studying theology, and she's in a mixed marriage. And her one child, well, they've got two older children, one's still at home. Neither one of them go to church, and the woman is devastated, and her one child did just what you said. They got married, assuming, because the one had applied for annulment, that they get the marriage
afterwards.
And it's not getting the annulment. Mm-hmm. And now they've been together, what, about 5-6 years? Yep. And the mom's devastated. She doesn't know what to do. And they go to church every Sunday. The husband joined the Knights of Columbus, but they can't receive the sacraments.
That's correct.
It's a hard thing for a parent to live with.
Do they have children then?
They have three now. She just had another one.
The only thing in that kind of situation you can do is to live as brother and sister in that marriage, and that's not an easy thing necessarily either. Mm-hmm. So, and then that would have to be all set up so that was done, and then... And because they can't marry, but they still have the reason why they would be justified to stay as brother together is that they have children and they need to take care of raising the children. But they would then have to agree to live as brother and sister.
Mm-hmm. But people don't realize that, Joe.
Yeah, they think it's all going to work out fine. They read too many books, it says, and they lived happily ever after, you know?
We had a priest one time that gave that sermon from the pulpit, and he said that girls are basically stupid. And he did, he said it just like that. He said, because they get this dummy, and he said, they think they're going to change him. He said, every woman thinks they can change the guy.
I know that I've heard this before. This is the couple gets married. The woman gets married thinking she's going to change the guy. And the man gets married to the woman thinks that the woman is not going to change. So the woman changes and he doesn't not going to change. And she thinks the man's going to change and he doesn't.
I don't like him. And you know, when we got married, we had a priest. His name was Father Roberts. He was wonderful. And we were blessed by the fact that he was also the marriage counselor. And he asked my husband and I the very first visit if we loved each other, and we thought, you know, for one, it's hard to understand until you get older that a priest would know a lot about marriage, when you're young. And he's going, do you love each other? And you're thinking, well, that's why we're here, right? And he says, and we said, yes. He said, no, you don't. He says, I hope you like each other. Because he said, if you don't like each other, it's not going to get to the love. And he says, you know, if you really want to see love, go to a 50th wedding anniversary. That's love. They've probably buried kids together, gone through sickness, they've gone through, and they're still there. And he says, when you can do that, you've got love. And, you know, at the time we were like, geez, if we just lived to be to our 50th wedding, you know what I mean? But you think about that. And as you mature in the marriage, you realize just what he was talking about. You know, and if you don't like the guy before you marry him, and I've seen so many couples say, this irritates me, that irritates me, and then they get married, and it really irritates them.
Well, I've seen two sometimes situations where they just are inseparable before the marriage, always. Always. Then after the marriage, they can't stand each other.
It's like when one of the priests said, the one I always remember is one of the priests in the pulpit said, it's like, you know, when you look over to the neighbor's lawn and you say, wow, he's got really nice green grass. I wish my grass was that green. And then you realize when you look closer, it's astroturf. Okay. It might have been the same sermon.
Yeah, no, it's when I was listening to you talk, I thought of everything. I've got 8 children married now, and I thought of, and the one thing kids say to you now in this day and age is, my friends say you're scrupulous. Do you know how many times you hear that? Have you heard that? You're scrupulous. Or you guys, you think everybody does these things. You know, we know that there's just passions, you know?
And passions are changed, they change quickly.
Yeah.
So, yes. So, anyway, I would promise Father McDonald I would stop. So that we can get beyond compliment and comfort for the time. Let's say a prayer.